All right, welcome back. Here we are wrapping up the weekend edition of the KE Report. And in this segment, I am featuring Tier 1 Silver. Now, I do get a lot of questions about this company, mostly asking, when is it going to be listed and tradable? We will get to that answer coming up in this interview. I am joined right now by Ivan Bebek, co-founder and co-chairman, and also Peter Dembicki, the new president and CEO at Tier 1 Silver. Now, guys, as I mentioned, I've received a lot of questions, especially on the back of closing the financing for just short of $13.5 million, which was up from $10 million initially announced. Ivan, I want to start off with a big picture look then at the spin out company, Tier 1 Silver. There's also another spin out in Peru that we'll talk about in future interviews. And on the back of that spin out, also Fury Gold Mines was created. Now, Ivan, you mentioned when the companies were being spun out that you were looking to unlock value in some of these assets that weren't carrying the same amount of value or getting the same amount of attention that you thought they deserved when they were all under the Orin brand. Give us an update now of where these companies stand after the spin out and how you think value has been unlocked, please.
Thanks, Corey. It's great to be back. It's no shortage of probably the busiest 6 months of our careers, splitting Orin into three. There's been a lot of changes, especially with Tier 1 Silver, since we split Orin into three companies on October 9th. I did advocate that there would be considerable value added into Tier 1 between that October 9th date and when we would relist. And that comes in a few different ways. Most importantly, our Curry Bia project has wowed us and really knocked us off the chair with excitement. And we are now looking at something that's developed into what we're describing as the best undrilled, high-grade, large-scale silver potential discovery globally. And that's where it ranks with us, which is a very large statement. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, today. Subsequent to that kind of revelation, we did receive drill permits on December 28th, which is amazing. For those of you who have followed us through the Peruvian, you know, fairly lengthy process to get permits, we achieved those during COVID, and we also achieved those during some political turmoil in Peru with the election. So no delay there. We got those on time, in fact, early. And most importantly, we got a new CEO that joined our group, Peter Dembicki, who's with us today. I've known Peter since the early days, since elementary school, actually, and I followed his career when he was a broker at Canaccord Genuity, one of the largest brokerage firms in Canada. Peter was at the top of his career, and you know, when we looked for this CEO for Tier 1 Silver, we didn't need another geologist. We certainly have what we argue is one of the better technical teams globally. And between Sean and myself, we're both very comfortable on the corporate aspects of the company. But as we split one company into three, the one place we wanted to beef up kind of our management was on the monetization capital markets aspect. And so Peter comes to us with a wealth of experience. He also has a unique background as a world champion rower. He won the world championship in rowing. And why that's important to us is not because we're going to row, but it's more to do with his work ethic. And if you want to meet somebody that's extremely determined, ambitious, driven, and professional, that's what you get with Peter. So off to a great start, got drill permits. The portfolio has grown for Tier 1 Silver, and we just completed that funding at a very good valuation that we think is just the start of what's to come.
So Peter, let's bring you in here. Ivan did provide a bit of a background there, but give us an update of what attracted you to join Tier 1, and even more importantly, the group that is behind Tier 1 Silver.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. It was a big decision for me to switch careers. 40 years old, I had an amazing 10 plus years at Canaccord. I did leave at the top of my career, but it really was first and foremost the people that drew me to the Tier 1 group, formerly Orin. Anytime I had clients investing in any of the deals or companies that I would recommend to anyone, there are a few points that I'd have to check off the box. One, have they done it before? Well, in the case of Ivan and Sean, yes, they've done it a couple times in good markets and bad. Two, operations, in the case of an exploration team, that's our technical team. Really is the best technical team I've seen in any exploration company out there. So that provided me with a lot of confidence. Three, you know, it's our shareholder base that we have inherited from Orin is so incredibly strong. They are such great loyal shareholders. They understand the business of exploration. So, you know, these kind of check boxes that you check off down the list is something that I would have put all my clients into at the time. And for Ivan to give me the tap and to bring me into the family, it's an honor. And now that I'm here, I see the efficiency, how everybody's working, and obviously the potential of our flagship project. I couldn't be more excited. We are firing on all cylinders here.
All right, Ivan, let's bring you back in and let's talk about the flagship project then. Curry Baya, you and I have talked about this in the past, but now that permits are received, there's a clear path to some near-term catalysts when it comes to drilling. What is the attack strategy going to be here?
Well, the favorite part of that answer is going to be drilling to see if we've got it, you know, one of these massive discoveries. And, you know, quick little overview. Curry Baya started with high-grade silver, and it got better and better and better. And so what we have is a 20-kilometer alteration system running several veins, multiple veins coming out of one source. They're running, 80 of them run above half kilo silver up to 300 kilo silver, which is absolutely astounding in terms of metal budget. Then there's gold veins as well, and 60 of them are running from 2 grams to 934 gram gold. So these veins are all emanating from one spot in the middle of this massive 20-kilometer alteration system. Before I get into what happens beneath the surface, real quickly, we age dated the alteration system because we are on the belt of some of the largest mines, porphyry mines in the world, such as Quellaveco, Tocopala, Cajone, and Cerro Verde. And we actually age-dated our alteration system to the same as those. And that's paramount when thinking about world-class discoveries. You need to be in that same era of the event that occurred for those mines. So to jump to the chase, what happens underneath all this silver and gold on surface with these incredible grades? We got a 700 to 750 meter window of targets for just precious metal. This would include, actually, there is now, you'll see soon, some open pit targets. But there's going to be stockwork veins in the top 120 meters, and we'll look for a series of those together to form an economic type of scenario. And then we get into about 200 to 300 meters of feeder structures that are in rocks that are much more permissible to host big, thick veins, type of vein structures. And then we get into a very big disseminated target for the last 400 meters of that vertical kind of window. And, you know, we don't know, like we could drill anywhere from, you know, 5-10 meters of a kilo silver up to 300 meters of a kilo silver. Those are the kind of possibilities that we're seeing in our targeting. You know, listening to some of the former Newmont world experts that are on our board, as well as our team there, you know, the classification is the size and the amount of targets that exist here for a big precious metal system are astounding to them. And it's something that's unique. It's something that hasn't been seen in a considerable amount of time. And there's really no strong analogous mine to it. Underneath all of that, that first 750 meters, we overlap into a big intrusion. And if you understand much about technical world of how the geology works, generally there's an event that created the system of epithermal, you know, deposits or grade that comes to surface. And that sometimes can be a porphyry. And because we're on the belt of these massive porphyries, we have to be porphyry minded and think, wow, what if this intrusion is a big porphyry? And you go from precious metal system and you drill 1,000 meters or two of porphyry after that. I mean, grade is going to be the number one question and risk. That could also be an epithermal intrusion where it could be continuous precious metals. But, you know, what I've just described to you was one of the biggest or the biggest target I've seen in 21 years of being in this business. It's never been drilled before. The lottery is going to be the grade, the grade and the width. You know, we've mapped some of the widths to be considerable through geophysics, but what's the grade going to be? Are we going to be drilling tens of meters of a kilo silver, 100 gram silver, or 200-300 kilo silver like we've seen on surface? So it's really a truly, you know, one of those rare opportunities. I hate and I like the cliche of once in a lifetime, but this is the first for me, and it probably be the last as an epithermal system that hasn't been drilled with this kind of endowment potential on a world-class belt.
All right. So, Peter, Ivan clearly has the big picture in mind here. A lot of targets, a lot of potential. Give us a few more of the nuances of this drill program. When's it going to start? What's the budget going to be? What more can you tell us about what the attack strategy is when those drills are on site?
Yeah, as soon as possible. I mean, we are overly excited about getting drills to the property, getting work done as we speak. So we're anticipating commencing drilling at the end of April, and we could possibly hope for results anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks following our first drills.
So the company's headline here in the presentation says pursuing world-class silver and gold discoveries in southern Peru, discoveries being plural. Now, the company does have a couple other projects, but what is the balance here? Obviously, Curibaya is the focus, but how are you going to balance out these other projects? And is there potential here for more acquisitions to come into the company?
Yeah, absolutely. We do have a couple other projects in our portfolio, and the reason why we've done that is for a couple reasons. One, you know, we often get the question, well, if Curibaya is so special, you know, why are you bothering with other projects? Well, for a number of reasons. We want to give our shareholders, our investors, multiple opportunities at world-class swings, multiple opportunities of finding that discovery along with us. And it always helps to mitigate the risk as well. I mean, mining exploration is a risky business. So we're doing it for those two reasons. And yes, you can expect more for us down the road. We'll be excited to share more about those projects as we go along.
So Ivan, I know you want to weigh in on this one. Give us your insights then on how you see the multiple projects playing into the overall company strategy, please.
Yeah, Peter couldn't have said that much better. I agree full-heartedly in mitigating the risk, getting those kind of huge swings that we all envy as shareholders to be part of. What happens if we get more than one of them instead of splitting the company again? Because I can testify to how much work that is. We would probably look to spin and sell versus to spin and run new companies. Great CEOs are very difficult to find. We found two of them in the last few months or last 6 months, and we're very fortunate to have them. But, you know, I think to Peter's point, mitigating the risk and giving more swings. And, you know, if we can be a repeat offender, I know other people have done this before in a good way ahead of us, such as Ross Beaty. If we can repeat success with multiple discoveries in this bull market that's in front of us, I think we would have really crushed it for our shareholders and for our share price going forward.
So, Ivan, as I mentioned, the company did just raise almost $13.5 million, upped from $10 million that was announced. The price was set at $1. I've had some questions come in asking, what caused the company to set the price here? Because it isn't public, right? So how did you guys go about setting this price, which then leads into a market valuation here of the company of over $100 million?
Well, two things there. You know, when setting the price, that's obviously a choice that management is provided the difficulty or the luxury of making. We measured a few things. We measured the investment demand, which was substantial, and that's why we increased our funding. If you read our press release there, you saw that we only increased it because of the quality of investors that were coming to us, not so much because we wanted to take more money at the time. We watched dilution very carefully, and we, even more importantly, watch who our shareholder base is, because that's our strength, and we appreciate all our shareholders. We were probably took about half of what was being offered to us, to be really honest about it. And our mechanism of finance was a private placement, which has a 4-month hold for Canadians, a 6-month hold for Americans. And this is what eliminates all the hedge funds, and a lot of different investment funds won't buy into private deals like this. So even with that kind of hurdle, we had an incredible amount of interest and demand. And what it's fueled from, and what everyone can be excited to be towards, is the confidence that's growing in Curibaya and the team and the other assets in the portfolio. And we're not going to talk too much about, you know, Emilia, the Coastal Batholith, or other acquisitions today, because Curibaya overshadows everything at its current state. It's ready to go. It's ready to drill. But these will be things in the background that we bring forward. So reminding you of what Orin traded at, as we were a company with assets both in Canada and Peru, we were trading as high as $300-400 million, you know, dollar market cap. And I'm aware that there's ounces at Homestake and, you know, in Committee Bay and whatnot. But in Peru, what we've done with Tier 1 is we've created the same, you know, portfolio approach It's very focused. The projects we're going for can be permitted in a very timely manner. It took 5 months to permit, or 5.5 months to permit Curry Baya start to finish. And we're going to keep it very live, meaning there should be drill program after drill program for the next few years to give these kind of discoveries, right? So we picked a number that was in the middle. We could have raised money higher. As shareholders, we lean for that. As investors, I'm sure people wanted it lower. And we still cut back a considerable amount of people at a dollar Canadian. The market cap, it's big for some, but it's small for us based on what we're trying to achieve. And what I mean by that is, if we get this right and we're finding and drilling, you know, 10 or 20 meters of kilos of silver underneath the surface, you know, I think getting to a multi-billion dollar market cap would be very, very, very realistic in the upcoming silver, anticipated silver market. I think we could really crush it that way. So from that perspective, I think the pricing was very fair. I think that in some ways, I think it was cheap, but we got really good investors. And I qualify it as being cheaper because of how big the opportunity is. So look for a lot of growth out of us. And, you know, there's a lot of risk behind what I'm talking about. I'm very aware of that. But the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward. And here, having an undrilled project that can be a new discovery, something that's never been drilled before on such a big prolific belt with such incredible grade, is truly the kind of investment that makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck as you look forward to waiting for those drill results.
Well, clearly the demand was there too, so that needs to speak to I think all of our listeners. One other quick question then, just over to you, Peter. When will the listing happen of Tier 1 Silver? I have a lot of people asking that.
I was hoping you were going to tell me that. I'm just joking. We are... It is as soon as possible. We are working every single day, and we're anticipating in March to be listed on the TSX Venture. But really, it's just working with the exchange. So it's on as soon as possible basis, really.
Okay. Guys, to wrap this up, I want to get a little comment from both of you regarding the markets, clearly taken from slightly different sides. Peter, you come from the broker background. Ivan, more on the company side, although Peter, now you're on the company side. Peter, let's start with you. Clearly, precious metals, more gold than silver, has been under some pressure, and some of the stocks have, most of the stocks have actually been dipping. What are you seeing in terms of market sentiment and overall interest in precious metals when it comes from now being on the company side of things?
Absolutely. So there's so many different ways to go about it and to look at it from an investment standpoint. What are the macroeconomic effects that are moving precious metals around? With silver, the one thing I do love is that there is a huge use case for it. I mean, we have the United States presenting one of the largest checks being written to enhance their renewable energy sector and infrastructure as we move away from fossil fuels. Well, you know, the amount of silver that is going to be required to fulfill that demand and need is astronomical, and it far outweighs what's being produced right now. All the electronics and electric vehicles and batteries and solar panels all have an incredible amount of silver in there. So I love it from that standpoint. And then obviously on a speculative level, you know, precious metals, I really do believe we're heading into a massive commodity cycle. You know, day by day, it's hard not to get caught up in the price swings of precious metals. But really, if you look at it and just stand back and say, okay, where are we heading for the next 10 years? You know, I find it's going to be an incredible investment.
Ivan, give us a little insights. I know you all are always watching the markets very closely. What are your thoughts on the current state of the precious metals market?
Great question. Well, first off, for the first time in my career, this sell-off did not bother me, you know, except for the share price. And I don't like to see investors frustrated and impatient and feel panic, right? However, we've been through so many waves as we enter the bull market. And to be honest, if gold had been through 2,300 right now, and we were on our way to 2,500, I would have been more anxious and more concerned, because we would have been in the final stages of this bull market and the mania that's coming. So I don't mind the sell-off. I think that if you listen to the macro picture, if you listen to the money printing that's ahead, to comments Peter just made with respect to stimulus and fiscal policy in the U.S. and the green energy plan that's coming, You know, we all know where this gold bull market is going. I mean, Goldman Sachs and everyone else is calling for this super mania. But before that, to see a big sell-off, the bid kind of pulled on the market is really not uncommon. It will create some liquidity for a lot of people that are going to look to come into a very small market. And so for me, if this did not happen, I would have worried that we were in the wrong point of cycle. So it confirms it. As far as stocks go, you know, how often do I look at the tape? I honestly look at our share prices once a day, this being Fury, because it's the one trading. I don't look at the share price more than once a day, and I don't look at the metal prices more than once a day, because I'm a big picture thinker, and our plan is so fundamentally aligned with the big picture that we just put our heads down and we drive the business forward. Now, as the wind gets sucked out of the market, you know, gold has sold off for two consecutive weeks. It's the most emotional investment you can make. It affects all commodities because it does have that much emotional impact. And when it slides like that, share prices tend to fall off cliffs, and the buyers, they don't leave necessarily the space. They just pull back and wait on the sidelines. So I know of a lot of large investors looking for the bottom here. It's definitely a buyer's market. I do sense a turn coming. I think what's going to drive the turn outside of US treasury yields and whatnot is going to be the next quarter from all the majors that have enjoyed the $1,900 gold price in Q4. Oil prices have not gone up too far. The cost of people has not inflated too much at all. So I still think we have some record quarters to come out of all these majors and mid-tier producing mining companies, which puts the spotlight on the one thing that matters most for us is who's finding metal, where are you going to find a big deposit, and what are you going to get paid for finding it? And I think for everyone's discomfort, it's incredibly hard to make these discoveries. You know, there's a series of companies that will go out there and they'll redrill the same thing and try to make you convince you it's better. But the real thing that this market needs and that everyone needs to see is a major discovery of consequence, something new that hasn't been drilled before. And, you know, being in that position with Committee Bay and also new targets around Eau Claire and Fury is outstanding for the gold side of the business. In silver, I mean, silver is something that I've wanted to be part of my entire career, because it trades at twice the P multiple of gold because of the leverage to the silver price. And so what Curibaya became and how it came together was not a good silver property. It came out as a spectacular silver swing. And we'll publish a cool fly-through video soon that will show people a lot of, you know, facts and evidence behind our enthusiasm. And lastly, copper. Copper is the future most strategic metal on the planet due to its use in vehicles, renewable energy, and better building materials and so on. And the shortage of copper and the demand supply is not going to be fixed by a big discovery, because it takes anywhere from 12 to 20 years to build a new big discovery into an actual mining scenario. So there is low-grade copper mines around the world that will never produce the tonnage or the amount of pounds of copper needed. And I think that we're going to enjoy a slow, you know, steady copper rising market for the next few decades to come. I think silver could go completely parabolic, much like described by recent people, not $1,000 an ounce, but $40 or $50 an ounce silver. And it's going to be extremely good times for silver companies. And as far as gold, I've been a gold bug my entire career. The volatility before a big move to the upside is essential. It's happening. It sucks when it's down, but if you focus on the big picture, as long as the companies you're investing into have two things: improving fundamentals and have cash, have a treasury to weather this downturn in this corner, you're safe, you know, in my opinion. I think it's a very, very good time to be ambitious with purchases of companies you like of quality. So be bullish, stay bullish on the big macro picture. Don't worry about the micro picture. Let the stocks be volatile. Just make sure the fundamentals are going the right way, which they are in our group of companies. So we're very excited.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap it up here. I appreciate you taking time on this weekend show. I also thank everybody for tuning in, listening to the weekend show and to all the daily editorials throughout this week. If any of you have any follow-up questions for Tier 1 Silver or any of the other companies that I have chatted with this week, please just email me, fleck@kereport.com. I will get those addressed for you, and be sure to check out throughout the week all the daily editorials covering some of the market action that continues to be quite volatile and quite crazy. This week was one, again, to remember, unfortunately for the precious metals, but also for the broad averages and some of the moves we saw, some of the weakness that came in at the end of the week. Guys, thank you again for your time. Everybody, I hope you have a great weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.